Familiar words from the Gospel of Mark, chapter 15, verses 21 through 41. There was a man walking by, coming home from work, Simon from Cyrene, the father of Alexander and Rufus, and they made him carry Jesus' cross. The soldiers brought Jesus to Golgotha, meaning Skull Hill. They offered him a mild painkiller, wine mixed with myrrh, but he wouldn't take it. And they nailed him to the cross. They divided up his clothes and threw dice to see who would get them. They nailed him up at 9 o'clock in the morning. The charge against him, the king of the Jews, was printed on a poster along with him. They crucified two criminals, one to his right, the other to his left. And people passing along the road jeered, shaking their heads in mock lament. "You bragged that you could tear down the temple and then rebuild it in 3 days. Well, show us your stuff. Save yourself. If you are really God's son, come down from that cross." The high priests, along with the religion scholars, were right there mixing it up with the rest of them and having a great time poking fun at him. He saved others, but he can't save himself. Messiah is he? King of Israel? Well, then let him climb down from that cross, and we can all become believers then. Even the men crucified alongside of him joined in the mockery. At noon, the sky became extremely dark. The darkness lasted 3 hours. And at 3 o'clock, Jesus groaned out of the depths, crying loudly, "Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani," which means, "My God, my God, why have you abandoned me?" Some of the bystanders who heard him said, "Listen, he's calling for Elijah." Someone ran off, soaked a sponge in sour wine, put it on a stick, and gave it to him to drink, saying, "Let's see if Elijah comes to take him down." But Jesus, with a loud cry, gave his last breath. And at that moment, the temple curtain ripped right down the middle. And when the Roman captain standing guard in front of him saw that, he had quit breathing. He said, "This has to be the Son of God." In the name of Jesus, Son of God, Jesus, Son of Man, Good Friday, 2011. Once again, we have heard those words that describe the killing of Jesus and the destruction of his life. And as I hear those words once again, it's very hard to imagine standing there, being part of that crowd and watching that terrible scene. I don't think I could have watched someone that I loved more than anyone else in the world be put to death in such a cruel and inhuman way without doing something, or saying something, or crying out to God to stop this killing. Could you have watched and waited for him to die in silence? There is something so brutal about this scene. It's unbearable to think of what they were doing to his body to kill him. And yet we are asked in each of the four Gospels to simply watch and do nothing to prevent the death of Jesus. And each Gospel adds its own piece to the story until we are given a detailed account of the actual death experience of someone who changed the lives of everyone that he met and changed the course of history. Matthew and Mark remind us that the whole earth became dark as Jesus groaned out of the depths of his being, my God, why have you abandoned me? And when they offered him a sponge soaked in sour wine, he cried out and breathed his last breath. In Luke, we hear the story of the criminals hanging on either side of him, the first deriding him on his helplessness. Some Messiah you are. And the second, who recognizes Jesus and speaks to him, remember me when you enter into your kingdom. And Jesus replies quite simply, today you will join me in paradise. And finally in John, we meet the four women and the one disciple who gather at the foot of the cross to watch him die. His mother, his aunt, Mary, the wife of Clopas, and Mary Magdalene, his closest friends. And Jesus says to his mother, woman, not mother, woman, here is your son. And to his beloved disciple, he says, and here is your mother. And after that, he speaks quite simply, I am thirsty. He takes the sour wine and he says, it is done. It is complete. And bowing his head, he offers up his spirit. Now, why do we have to watch this scene in such detail? It feels like one of those prison scenes when a criminal is condemned to death by injection and a group gathers to watch him die until pronounced dead. End of life. Each of the gospel writers describe the scene in some detail, but they tell the story almost without emotion. A simple account of the end of life for a man that each one had known and loved and followed. Why do we have to look at this final scene? There is no last-minute rescue by God to stop this killing. It is over. Is there something that we need to see in this terrible picture? Something so important that we have to watch every detail of his suffering. Even Jesus' mother has to watch her son dying. Could you do that? I couldn't. I don't think most of us could. Unless there is something in our seeing that is absolutely essential to our understanding of who Jesus was and why he came to live among us. Something we have to see. Something we have to know. Now, you know, we don't see very well, most of us. We miss a lot in life in not seeing. How many times do we say, but I didn't even notice that. or I didn't see that until it was too late. But in this scene, we are forced to see Jesus' experience of dying in full color, stripped down to bare essentials, life lived, life finished, death. Now, could it be that the reason we have to watch every detail of his dying is so that we do not miss any part of his living? Can it be that our knowledge of who he is depends on our seeing him through his entire life and death? And if that is really so, then what must we see? What must we learn in these final hours of Jesus' life? The first part of this scene is unmistakable. Jesus allows this whole process to occur. He does not attempt to defend himself in words or actions. He does not cry out to his disciples or his mother to save him. He doesn't curse the actions of those who are putting him to death. He submits to a procedure that is incredibly painful without screaming in agony. His body hangs nailed to a cross in front of a small group of people that also do not defend him nor criticize his killers. They watch in silence as he enters into the dying process. What lesson is Jesus teaching us? For he was always teaching lessons to his disciples and the people who walked with him. He never let an opportunity go by without telling a story or a parable to help people know who God was and what kind of life God requires of us. Two lessons are immediately visible. First, Jesus is not afraid. Most of us would be pleading for our lives, scared out of our mind. But Jesus enters into his dying without evidence of any fear. Jesus' trust in God is so powerful. It is the center of his life and ministry. And in life's most awful circumstances, he trusts in what cannot be seen nor heard, but which exists at a fundamental level within him. Son of God, never separated from the Father. But Jesus was also called Son of Man, fully God, but fully one of us. And in his humanity, we hear him cry out, not in fear, but in pain and anguish. My God, why have you abandoned me? Why are you doing this to me? Something that each of us cry out to God when our world is collapsing around us. Why, God? What have I done? Why me? But for Jesus, the pain of abandonment only reinforces who he was. He was truly one of us. He knew the reality of being human. And at the moment of his death, he experiences the full measure of the dual role he has carried all his life. He belongs to God, and so he is unafraid. But he also belongs to us, and he knows the pain of being left alone to die. The next thing we notice is that he never ceases to minister to others. Even in his darkest hour, he's not bothered by the taunting of one criminal who says, "Save yourself, save us. What kind of Messiah are you?" But to the other criminal who recognizes who Jesus is, he promises new life. "Today, you will be with me in paradise." Even in death, he brings the good news of God's kingdom to anyone who will listen. And finally, in the Gospel of John, we reach the ultimate moment of his life and the completion of his journey. He is dying, and he sees his mother and his beloved disciple standing silently at the foot of the cross. And he says to his mother, "Woman, here is your son." Not mother, but woman. And to his disciple he says, "And here is your mother." He does not abandon the woman who brought him into life. He does not abandon her. He gives her a new son and teaches his most important lesson. As he does not abandon her, neither does God ever, ever, ever abandon us. Once again, he is teaching us the lesson of love that he has carried and lived into the world. The final lesson, and the most important one: everything always begins and ends in love. Love that never stops, even at the point of death. Love that connects us each to each, but a love that grows beyond limitations and boundaries into a new kind of relationship, a new way of loving, a love that does not die, a love that never ends. The ultimate and the most precious gift of life. And in his final message to the world, he speaks with utter simplicity. "It is done. It is done. It is complete. It is finished." As he shows us how to live, he also shows us how to die. And he takes us with him, even unto death. For Jesus is dead. On this Good Friday, it is done. It is complete. It is finished. And all that is left for us is to bury him, to weep and to mourn, to cry out in anger, to rail against the stupidity and cruelty that sentenced him to death, and to walk away. It is done. It is complete. It is finished. And we must bury our beloved brother, who never deserved to die like this. We must bury our beloved brother, who loved us better than anyone has ever loved us. We must bury our beloved brother. It is done. It is complete. It is finished.